Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Jason Leopold, who is a reporter for many years for many prominent outlets and currently writing for Al Jazeera. And you can find Jason's reporting online at aljazeera.com. Jason Leopold, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
It's great to be with you, David. Thanks for having me.
It's great to hear your voice. I haven't talked to you in a long time. Seen some of your recent articles about the U.S. government's death camp in Cuba, which you have visited just recently, as I understand.
That's right. I was there about 2 weeks ago to tour the detention camps and the hospital, the library, the food preparation. Unfortunately, which obviously should not be a surprise to, you know, to many people, we did not have any access to any of the prisoners. So this was, you know, very much the military's opportunity to, you know, provide us with, you know, their reality of the way things are, or of the way the operations look over at Guantanamo. But make no mistake, David, you know, there have been many reports that I have seen about how well the prisoners have it at Guantanamo, how they have access to satellite television, classes, DVDs, books, 3 square meals a day. This is a prison. I don't think that any amount of or any number of amenities will ever replace the, you know, freedom, first of all, and, you know, the fact that they have been holed up in these cramped cells for 11 years.
In fact, with dozens of prisoners there in Guantanamo and having been there for years now, declared innocent, absolved, cleared of all charges and cleared for release but not released, it might actually make sense if it didn't resemble a prison for those individuals. But you didn't see the prisoners, but you've had access to lawyers who have had access to the prisoners, and you have gotten your hands on government documents, and among the stories that you've made news reporting is on the hunger strike, that you would think that if the prison were such a wonderful place to be, as Donald Rumsfeld characterized it so long ago, people would be willing to eat, and instead they are on hunger strike.
Yeah, this is a hunger strike, obviously, that's been going on now for 4 months. Yes, the document that I have that I obtained from the United States Southern Command, which has oversight of the prison, is a very, very important document. And this is the hunger strike and force feeding standard operating procedures. Back in 2005, there was another large hunger strike, mass hunger strike, that took place at Guantanamo. And that's when we had several hundred prisoners detained there at the time. And there was a standard operating procedure in place then, although it was heavily redacted. I was preparing to write a story based on that standard operating procedure, more or less to remind people of how of what the policies are at Guantanamo. I contacted the United States Southern Command. I asked them if this SOP is still in place, and then they said nope, it's actually been replaced with a new one, and that new one is dated March 5th. It went into effect not long after that, and that's about a month after the hunger strike started. And this document was recently highlighted. You know, I published a story with Al Jazeera. I actually published the story the day that I arrived at Guantanamo, so it caused a bit of friction when I landed over there. They were not too happy, as you could probably imagine. This document was highlighted by the New York Times recently, a columnist for the New York Times, in which he questioned whether force feeding is torture. And you know, the document makes it very clear, David, that this is a brutal and dehumanizing medical procedure that takes place. The doctors who are doctors and nurses who are overseeing the force feeding, that they're nothing more than an apparatus of the, you know, of the security forces there, of the guards. They work very closely with the guards. The previous version of this SOP gave authority or granted authority to, you know, medical officials, the final authority, that is, over who needed to be force-fed. This SOP gives final authority to the commander of JTF GIPO, Joint Task Force Guantanamo. There are several significant changes. The previously it said, you know, prisoners should be, you know, allowed to act with autonomy. This one does not provide any autonomy to, you know, the prisoners. It, you know, it also says that questions, or rather, it says that, the, you know, they need to give consent. But if they don't give consent, they'll do it anyway, because it's a, you know, it's a matter of life and death. What's really notable about this SOP, David, is the use of these restraint chairs. And that's never been published before, and no one has ever really gotten a good look at how it works when you're placed in one of these chairs. And I saw it; it was on display along with a force feeding kit when I was over at Guantanamo in the prisoner hospital over there. And they let us into this room, and this was just a display, at least that's what they're saying, but they let us into this room, David, and this, you know, my immediate thought, perhaps it was just the entire setting, was that it looked like an execution chamber, because it was this large, this large room. In the back there were curtains drawn, and then right in the center was this chair and this force feeding kit, and it was just, you know, ominous. You know, it makes it clear that this is the policy is to force feed. The doctors and nurses are on hand simply to carry out what that policy is.
Well, we will post a photo of the that you took of that chair and links to your articles as well. The prison has been responding in other ways, in addition to force-feeding the prisoners, exacting retribution on these hunger-striking prisoners, imposing new requirements and penalties.
Yes, yes. In fact, again, you know, you have to go back and look at, it's very important to look at what was happening back in the Bush years. We know, you know, that torture took place there. We have those documents. The Senate Armed Services prepared an incredibly important report in 2009 about the treatment of, you know, prisoners in custody of the U.S. military at Guantanamo and elsewhere. There were several things that or protocols that went into effect during the Bush years in response to, you know, mass hunger strikes, riots. One of the protocols that were in play, that went into place, was that, you know, a search of Qurans, or guards could not handle, you know, the prisoner's Quran. In addition to that, the search policy in which you search a prisoner's genital area, that was, there's actually an SOP that said, we will not do that due to cultural sensitivities. And it said, and this is actually in the review that Obama ordered in 2009, which he put this task force together to look at the, you know, conditions at Guantanamo and recommendations that were made. And so there was this you know, section in there that said, you know, we're not going to search the genital area of any prisoners because due to cultural sensitivities. And, you know, the commander of the Joint Detention Group recognizes that this is not something that is practiced at other prisons, but we're not going to do this as a matter of respecting the prisoners. Now, well, that's changed, and many things have changed since the start of the hunger strike. Now, the prisoners, before they go meet with their attorneys, before they go anywhere, when they leave the camp, they go through this search. Yeah, their genitals are checked, and it's unclear how that what that entails. You know, the military will tell you one story and the lawyers will tell you another. But now that it's, you know, they've implemented this new policy, the prisoners are saying, I don't want to go through this. So I refuse to see my attorneys, or I refuse to see my attorney. And that's basically what all of the prisoners are now saying. So the attorneys last week filed, I think it was last week, it may have been the week before, but they recently filed an emergency motion in federal court and asking a judge to intervene, because they're basically saying that this new policy essentially cuts off prisoners from having any access to counsel, deprives them of their right to counsel, is retribution for their participation in the hunger strike. And there's actually going to be a hearing on that on Wednesday, June 5th, on that motion. So, you know, the military will say, well, we're doing this search. We've implemented this to stave off the flow of contraband into the prison. So they search them before they leave, through this humiliating, what the attorneys say is a humiliating search. And when they return, and they're talking about contraband items like, iPods, MP3 players, food, weapons. Now, they won't say it directly, but they allude to the fact that it's the attorneys that are slipping the prisoners some sort of contraband type item. They claim that when they had this raid in mid-April, in which they they cracked down on the communal camp and had this pre-dawn raid and put everyone into solitary confinement, that they found an assortment of contraband items, Nintendo game player, iPod. So it's strange how things are changing rapidly there, and how many of the prisoners are actually saying to their attorneys that it feels like a return, to the dark days of Bush in 2005, particularly when things were just really bad there.
You report that some of these prisoners' lawyers are making a case that the current man in charge at Guantanamo may be unfit for that position.
Yes, I mean they're singling out Colonel John Bogdan and the commander of the Joint Detention Group. He's more or less the prison warden. He arrived there a year ago this month, and he, this month being June, he implemented or oversaw the implementation of many aggressive policies that the prisoners felt that certainly that why are you returning to these, to these policies such as, inspections of the Quran, which are just, it's just, again, something that they did not do there at Guantanamo because, they recognized how it would incite the prisoners, taking away their certain items like letters and eyeglasses. I mean, the prisoners felt that this was just, the type of punishment that was being placed upon them for what they're saying is no reason other than, a command or a colonel, showing his authority. And many of the guards, David, have, that are there come from or have come from recently war zones in Iraq and Afghanistan. There in these unclassified notes that the attorneys have provided us, they're quoting the prisoners as saying is that this is what they're hearing from the guards, that, I was able to do this in Iraq and Afghanistan. What's the big deal? So it's a different environment there now. And, let me just add, David, that one of the most frustrating things during my trip there at Guantanamo, as I indicated, that we did not have any access to the prisoners. And, we had military escorts throughout the trip and throughout the tour. And it was so difficult to find, I shouldn't say difficult, it was impossible. You will not find anyone that would confirm or corroborate, obviously, any of the stories that the prisoners were saying in terms of their treatment, what's happening to them there. The color that they gave us was, this is great here. This is a great environment. And in addition to that, the prisoners, actually, they're manipulative, they're liars. They're constantly splashing guards with, with feces and urine. They're cursing at them, but nothing about the way in which they're treated. Then at the end of the day, there were actually some lawyers there who were also visiting, their client. So I went at the end of the day and met with some of the lawyers and then got a completely different story about what was happening, during the course of the day. So it left me feeling incredibly frustrated and it made it impossible, to really get at the truth. And so, to circle back to this hunger strike, policy, force feeding policy document, why that's such an important document, David, is because it's the government's own document. It speaks for itself. It's the one, the one document where, you can't question the veracity of it. It's clear that this is a brutal procedure that's taking place. It's the one bit of truth that I felt that was in everything that we've been hearing, you know, over the past 4 months.
It's clearly a torturous, horrendous policy to impose on these prisoners that have to be strapped into this chair to have this food inserted through their nose in a incredibly painful procedure that's against their will and against the ethics of most of what thinks of itself as the civilized world these days. But you also reported on a discovery that that the prison was keeping listening devices hidden in rooms where the prisoners would meet when they would meet with their attorneys. What's become of that situation?
Well, that actually is still sort of winding its way through the military commissions, and that's where it was revealed. It was revealed in February, and it's been a terrible year, public relations-wise, David, for, you know, the Obama administration and the military with regard to, you know, Guantanamo. So during the tribunals for the alleged bomber of the USS Cole, it was revealed by one of the attorneys in court that a smoke detector affixed to the ceiling there and to the wall in the meeting rooms over at Camp Echo, which is right across the way from Camps 5 and Camp 6. And just to digress for one moment, so Camp 5 and Camp 6 are, you know, behind barbed wire and the chain link fence. And literally, it would sort of be like walking across the street to your, you know, to your neighbor's house. There's Camp Echo. In order for them to get to Camp Echo, for the prisoners to get to Camp Echo, they have to be, they are shackled and they are led into these vans. And that's another issue that has come up, that they're led into these vans that have a really low ceilings, apparently. And this is what the attorney said in this emergency motion that they filed, that, you know, they're forced to sit in these positions that, that are almost like stress positions. But in Camp Echo, in these meeting rooms, the attorneys discovered that what appeared to be a smoke detector was actually a microphone. You know, testimony by Bogdan, the commander of the Joint Detention Group, he said, oh, well, you know, they were never turned on. They were there. They were, you know, the FBI left them behind, but they were never turned on. We're not listening to, you know, what is happening in these meeting rooms. In terms of being unfit for command, again, the letter that went, there was a letter that went to Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel, and it was military defense attorneys representing some high-value detainees who actually said that they believe that Colonel Bogdan was unfit for command because of what has unfolded since he arrived there and what's led to the hunger strike. In addition to the testimony that he delivered or that he gave in February over these listening devices, which has been called into question, the veracity of his testimony, the truthfulness of his testimony, has it's been alleged that he was lying, you know, committed perjury, and therefore would not be, is not fit for command. So it's very significant, you know, that military defense attorneys have actually said, I want you to take a look at this, Secretary of Defense Hagel. And in terms of what's happening with those, you know, with that issue with the listening devices, it's still somewhat unresolved. I mean, I do believe the attorneys are continuing to look further into it, but the commissions themselves, David, are starting up again in about a week. And, you know, one of the other things that sort of part of this public relations disaster is that the defense attorneys, you know, have also said that all of their communications, their emails, their files were accessed by the prosecution, you know, because they work in the Office of Military Commissions. You know, they work in the office, you know, of the Chief Defense Counsel. You know, so they're working on computers that are more or less government computers. They discovered that 500,000 emails had been accessed by the prosecution, privileged attorney-client communications. And then in addition to that, their files were lost. That led to a delay of, the next round of hearings in the military commission. It's starting up again, and this issue will be addressed.
Well, I'm sure they accessed the defense attorney's files, but didn't read them, and smoked pot, but didn't inhale. And it seems to me that there's a serious danger in not just people taking these kind of claims seriously, but in allowing a different standard of justice for a different type of person. So we have trials with certain rights for defendants, for certain U.S. citizens on U.S. soil. For others, if you're in the military, you've lost rights. If you're not a U.S. citizen, you've lost rights. If you're declared an enemy combatant, you've lost rights. We have people who can be assassinated, not just imprisoned, not just tortured or force-fed by the U.S. government because of their status as second-class citizens. We stamp people with a scarlet F for felon, and they've lost their rights. We have immigrants who don't have papers, and they've lost their rights. I mean, aren't we pushing the edge in Guantanamo of what we will allow for lower class human beings in our justice system?
Absolutely. I mean, I completely agree with you, David. And in fact, if you recall, you and I sat down for an interview, back in 2009. This was not long after Obama was elected, and we kind of touched on this. We still weren't sure of how this administration would sort of what type of administration it would be. And I remember at the time that you were pointing certain things out. Well, it's obviously a lot worse than what we originally saw back in 2009. What you saw, and the problem here, David, is that the public has become so used to these policies, these laws, these standards, that they're so accepting of it. I mean, there's a very, very, very small group of people that are actually questioning this, and not just demanding answers, but demanding changes. So that to me seems to be the sort of sad reality of what's happened. So everything that you're that you highlighted there is true, but part of the reason I'm sure you're aware is that there's not enough voices there that are speaking up about it, and instead are just accepting it. And certainly with this administration, if you're one to, particularly if you're labeled a progressive or a liberal, and you happen to call out the administration for what they're doing, there are some that will criticize you or actually attack you for doing that. One thing about that I try to explain to people who do that to me is that I've been consistent during the past 10 years in my reporting. My reporting has not changed. I still reveal the civil liberties violations, the human rights violations. I use documents to do that. I use interviews. I mean, it's been consistent from Bush up until Obama's second term. But the public, has for the most part changed and changed, with whomever is sitting in the Oval Office. So, the problem here is that, the way I see it, is that all of these issues that we're talking about, that you're talking about, have been politicized. They're human rights, civil liberties. I mean, these are not issues that should be politicized, but they have been. It's not a human rights violation if a Democrat's doing it. It is if a Republican's doing it. Drone strikes are okay if Obama does it. They're not okay if George Bush does it. There's this hypocrisy.
Well, you're absolutely right. There nonetheless was enough public pressure to compel President Obama a couple of weeks back now to stand up and give a speech about Guantanamo and about the drone kill program. And he made lots of vague, rhetorical, non-committal commitments in that speech that was sort of a Rorschach test. And the New York Times and others who wanted to believe that the wars were ending and Guantanamo was closing yet again and so forth ran with that story. And yet you had another drone strike 6 days later, and the same policies clearly in place. And the language of the speech clearly articulated in a way to give people the impressions they might want without committing the president to anything whatsoever. What is the reality since the speech?
The reports that two Guantanamo prisoners have been released, that's just false. That did not happen. And there's still 166 prisoners there. And keep in mind that we're not talking about if they start to release prisoners from Guantanamo. It's going to be an incredibly slow process, David. And you have to keep in mind that many of these prisoners are not in the best of health. There have been prisoners who have been cleared for release and ended up dying at Guantanamo. Okay, and that happened last September with Adnan Latif, you know, the young Yemeni prisoner who suffered from mental health problems allegedly, you know, or at least an autopsy report says he committed suicide. What's going to happen now is that they're, you know, one by one, you know, we'll start to see, you know, some of these prisoners perhaps, you know, being released to countries like Yemen. But if it goes according to the way that, you know, the Obama administration seems to have it planned, and it could be 10 years, you know, before the 86 are eventually transferred. Yemen is supposedly working with the U.S. on this rehabilitation center where, you know, at least the Yemenis that, you know, would be placed into for, you know, for some time. You know, you have the prisoner, Shakir Ahmer, the last British prisoner at Guantanamo, who has been cleared for release for a very long time. But, and the U.K. claims that they've, you know, said to the U.S., hey, as early as mid-May when they spoke to John Kerry, Secretary of State, and said, hey, we want him back. But, you know, the U.S. doesn't want to send him back to the U.K. They want to send him to Saudi Arabia. Why do they want to do that? Because Shakir Ahmer is not the type of prisoner who will be quiet. He won't keep quiet, David. This is a guy who will leave, and he will be loud, and he will be vocal, and he will reveal or just talk about everything that happened at Guantanamo. You know, this administration, this government, this country does not want that to happen. So they want a place, they want him sent to Saudi Arabia, where he'll, you know, just be locked up further. So it really does remain to be seen, you know, whether these words will turn into action. You know, placing someone in the role at the State Department to start, you know, working on, to start working and starting the process of releasing the prisoners. I mean, it's at this point, David, it's symbolic. You know, it's like, you know, Obama saying, okay, look, I'm going to put these people in these positions. I've got Lisa Monaco, who's my former national security advisor or handle national security matters, you know, for me at the White House. She'll now be the point person on Guantanamo. But again, you already have these, you know, prisoners cleared for release. So all they have to do is sort of act on what the, you know, the law says, which is, you know, a section in the National Defense Authorization Act, Section 1028, I believe, and start issuing those waivers and, you know, moving forward. You know, right now it's still just words. And you know, the attorneys are not, are clapping about it either. And I think that everyone feels that they cannot trust, and when I say everyone, the people who are involved with Guantanamo and, you know, and representing prisoners for going on a decade now, they're just, you know, don't trust, you know, what the administration is saying. And, you know, keep in mind that since Obama's speech 2 weeks ago, the number of prisoners on hunger strike, it hasn't dropped. In fact, the number of prisoners who are being force-fed has increased.
Jason Leopold is a writer for Al Jazeera. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.